Well, Lonnie Dupree lives in Grand Marais most of the time when he's not exploring the Arctic or climbing mountains, and he joins us today here in the studio to talk about Alone at the Top, climbing Denali in the dead of winter. Welcome.
Hi, Jay.
Welcome back. Good to talk to you again.
It's always nice to be at the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is quite an impressive piece of work, and of course, climbing Denali. Took you four tries, but you did it.
Yeah, kind of like a dog on a bone. Once I get an idea going, I can't seem to let it go until I at least get some. I feel like I've accomplished something on it. Mm-hmm. I don't have to summit, but that particular mountain, I got quite close several times, so it teased me.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I knew you'd done it four times before I read the book, but I didn't realize that you were that close. I mean, you got real close on one of those.
Well, my very first try on Denali, my first go of it, I got all the way up to 17,000, basically 8 hours from the summit, and then the wind pinned me down in a snow cave, a makeshift snow cave up there at 17 for a week. And just slowly ran out of food, mm-hmm. and had to retreat, of course. But Denali was always throwing roadblocks at you, whether it's super heavy snows like 4 to 8 feet at a given time, or high winds of 80 miles an hour or greater, and temperatures of minus 60. So it's a challenge, to say the least.
Well, you started this adventure a few years before, and you went up there with a couple of your friends from Grand Marais and did it in the summertime to kind of get to know the place.
Yeah, Buck Benson mm-hmm. from town here, and Tom Supernaut, friends of mine, we had this harebrained idea that we were going to go climb Denali because we were getting a little... we needed some time away from town.
Oh, I see. Sure.
At that time.
Well, that's away.
And so we let it kick around for a while, and then finally I called Buck back, and I said, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Let's go up there. None of us really have much climbing experience, but with my expedition experience, we'll do what we can and try to be safe, and if it gets to be too much, we'll turn around. And in the end, we ended up climbing the mountain in a very short order, I think 13 days. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the hardest trips any of us had ever done or did. And we, on the way down, I just started observing the route we went up and decided I felt it was safe enough for me to go solo.
Let me talk to you about that, because you mentioned this several times during the book. It's pretty unusual. I mean, it's always dangerous, and usually there's a small group of people that go, or two or three anyway, and you wanted to do this on your own, realizing that that you are alone at the top, and you're alone from, let's face it, 12 to 14,000 feet on up. There's nothing there. But you and the Raven, by the way.
There's once you get dry, Denali sits about 60 miles away, air miles away from a little town called Talkeetna. And so once you get dropped off in the Alaska Range in the dark part of December, right before Christmas on the 21st is when I start, to give me the most time that I need to actually try to get up it in January. You are in a place that there's nobody up in the Alaska Range in the winter at all. And so you're pretty cut off from even being rescued if you have an issue. So it's a big commitment. So you have to have all your ducks in a row and your mind in the right place before you get there.
Well, let's talk about ducks in a row, because at the back of your book, which, by the way, you wrote with Pam Lowagi, and she was just up here. She works for the Star Tribune, and she's doing a piece on Grand Marais, WTIP's 20th year in the business.
So yeah, congratulations on that, by the way. Yeah,
well, it was very nice to meet her. She's but in the back of the book, you've got a lot of information on on gear and food and this kind of thing, and you weave that into this into the narrative of the book quite well as too. But how do you know what to take with you? You ate a lot of potatoes and peas, man. I don't know. I really want to ask you why.
Is there something
special about that?
Well, there's it's the carbs that you need at the end of the day, yeah. And it's quick. You can just add hot water to it and mix mm-hmm. it up. But there's a lot of other things that go along with that. We add olive oil if we need extra fat mm-hmm. in the diet. We have a wide range of stuff that I've used on polar expeditions over the years that mm-hmm. keep us going. But I had to change the diet slightly to mountaineering because as you get higher up in altitude, your appetite goes away. And yeah, so you need to eat something that you really do like.
I was surprised at that. I mean, I know you have the breathing and giddiness and some, that kind of stuff, but the loss of appetite could be dangerous.
Right, and you have to, especially in mountaineering, you have to eat when you're not hungry, drink when you're not thirsty. You have to always keep well hydrated and energy, mm-hmm. a lot of energy in your body to just sustain that effort of climbing at high altitudes, pulling a heavy sled, or carrying a big backpack.
Well, you don't look like you lost weight.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't mean that to be, you know, aside yeah. because you never look like you've got much weight on you. But it just seems to me that to know how to do that, to pack it and then to carry it off. I mean, you were up there for how many days?
Well, I every year I carried 34 days with the provisions that I could stretch out to 42 days. With the hopes of, you know, getting the expedition over with in around 21 days. So I have a pretty ample backup plan there. And you have to because you can get pinned down for 2 weeks waiting for the weather to clear to get out of there again. So patience is what I learned most on Denali because you're sitting in a small snow cave. You don't know if the storm is going to last a few hours or a couple weeks. And many times it lasted a week where you're just sitting in one spot waiting for the weather to improve so you can continue climbing or get out of there.
One of those earlier trips, you were really pinned down for quite a while. I mean, you were going squirrely there for a while, as I understand.
Yeah. Well, being stuck in a 4x4 cubicle underneath the snow surface near the top of a mountain like that and trying to keep busy is the effort. You need to, I think of myself as kind of like a professional putzer. You know, I can make the most out of almost nothing. And that's what keeps me busy, whether it's, you know, scraping the snow out of the insoles of my boots or getting the frost out of my mittens or sewing my wind jacket or making something extra fancy for dinner, like, you know, mashed potato and peas.
Well, with a little duck fat. I noticed that
with
was
a little duck fat.
Tell me, the book has quite a number of photos in it, too. And the crampons, which you absolutely need to negotiate a good share of the climb, what are they made of? They look, they're a lot bigger than I thought crampons were.
Yeah. Well, they're, first of all, they attach to a boot that is twice as big as I normally wear because I want to be able to get as much insulation in that boot.
Yeah.
And so the crampons I have on there are stainless steel 14-point crampons. So they have a couple big points in the front and 12 smaller points going towards the back. And there's certain techniques of walking with crampons to keep you in contact with the mountain. So there's a lot of those techniques I learned early on during training sessions prior to going to Denali, exactly how to use those and also not to snag a pant leg and flip yourself off the mountain or anything like that. So there's a lot to using your crampons to the best of their abilities. And so,
well, you also did that training with somebody that had quite a bit of experience.
Well, when I put together a project like this, I try to research what I feel is maybe one of the best mountaineers out there who's guiding today. And I actually got in contact with a friend of mine, Elias Marcos. He is a chief guide for Rainier Mountain Guides out in out in Washington. And he, I just want to learn how to walk in crampons the most efficient, because there's about six or seven different styles of walking in those things. And then also using your ice axes, what's the best way of using those, and how to self-arrest in case you do fall. Because I'm not attached to any rope during that entire time. So
no, and it was scary.
A single slip can be fatal.
Because when you and Buck and were he actually was saved by a rope.
Yeah, the three of us climbing. Buck punched through a very large crevasse on our way down and was dangling 10, 20 feet below the surface of the snow with his heavy sled behind him in this hole. And luckily we had another team. There was another team coming up exactly at the same time where we were, and they gave us a hand getting Buck out. So I asked him if he was scared down there, but he said he wasn't. He knew he was hanging by the rope. He was just fine, and there was a lot of friendly people out of that hole that were going to help him get out of there. So,
oh, man. Well, you mentioned the ice axis, and that's that played a big role in your narrative as far as using them almost like a walking stick. And, of course, obviously, if you did need them, on the ice. I mean, we're talking about ice faces here in many cases. As I understand it, the park rangers had some ropes available for summer climbers, but they were all frozen in. And it just seems like that's the piece of equipment you really got to keep a hold of.
Well, there's two pieces of equipment. Yeah, you couldn't climb the mountain without an ice axe or crampons. You can't. You just couldn't physically do it. There would be no means of protection if you did fall. So you they're really your two most important daily tools that you are using every day, and you use them to the best of their ability, and how to self-arrest and how to front point, how to duck walk, how to, you know, plunge step on the way down, all these techniques that you use when you're wearing crampons.
Well, talk about going down, because we think about, of course, of going up, and it's strenuous and it's tiresome, and it really pushed you to the limits. But coming down is dangerous. I think I read where it's more dangerous.
Well, majority of mountaineers on the descent try to be extremely careful, because this is when you're tired. And this is when you basically have no handholds. See, if you're climbing up a mountain, you got handholds in front of you, right in front of your eyes. There's a handhold. I can use my axe on this. I can see my toes. I can see my feet. You can climb pretty well. On the way down, you really can't see your feet, just where your heels are going, and you have no handholds. So you gotta learn to walk properly when you're going down, whether it's, you know, flat footing all the way down, kind of a crouched over, ready with your ice axe for in case you trip so you can self-arrest, or sometimes it's so steep you have to turn around and down climb with your axes, front pointing with your crampons. Sometimes you have to do it on rock even. So where you just snag a piece of rock with just the tip of your crampon points, and you're just holding on a, you know, quarter inch little gouge out of some rock face, or that's called dry tooling, where you're using your ice axes actually just to snag little cracks in the rock to pull yourself up on. So it's, there's all these techniques that all come into play on a lot of mountains. On Denali, it's primarily steep snow and ice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this thing about the book that impressed me as much as the feat and the accomplishment is, and also, by the way, a marked lack of bravado. This is a humble book. You knew you were up against something, and you respected it. I mean, you all, I know you well enough to know you respect nature, and particularly with all of your experience in the cold. But there was a lot of personal stuff in this book that I guess I hadn't expected. That makes it more than just Lonnie's adventure on the mountain.
Well, the whole Denali thing was... about going solo is that I recently had gotten divorced from Kelly, and so now I'm out on my own. And so it was about trying to find out who Lonnie is and what is Lonnie all about and all this. And so I took what I've learned over the last 25 years of polar exploration, applied it to Denali, and this is something I wanted to do for myself. It was just a way to just me with nature and learning about me, giving myself time to think about, you know, the purpose of life and what life's about and all that kind of stuff. And you have plenty of time to do that, 7 days stuck under the snow in a snow cave. And it was not about conquering a mountain at anything. It was more about conquering fears, some fears I had, and also about, you know, when I got to the summit of Denali, it wasn't holding your ice axe up and going raw. It was bawling my eyes out for 15, 20 minutes, thanking the powers that be that I was alive, and hoping that I am going to be able to stay alive until I get down.
Also, seeing an absolutely incredible view, as you describe it.
Yeah, of course, being at the highest point in North America in the middle of winter, it's the lighting that you get in the winter that you don't get in the summer months. It's more lavenders and blues and just... It's cold, but also it's in a beautiful way, and it's a privilege to be able to see that, and having the health to be able to do and see something like that at a time of year when a lot of people don't or can't.
Sure. Well, you said that a lot of this was about discovering Lonnie. And I noticed that most of the expeditions that you've been on have been, you know, built around certain environmental issues and climate, certainly the Arctic things about the change. And that wasn't the case here. I mean, it comes across that this was a personal challenge for personal reasons. I mean, you obviously could relate to that. And when you... go and do more, and you are, then there seems to be a different motivation in it. So this comes across as something you had to do.
Yeah, and it was, you know, and I never in the past, because most of my stuff has been exploration, yeah. in the bigger sense of the word, and I always thought mountaineering is not being that, and as much. Especially if mountains have been climbed before. But what made Denali different for me was that I would be there at a time of year when no one has, solo. Yeah. I shouldn't say when no one has. There's been a couple that have been there solo, but one has passed away and one failed to get up there in that month of January. So it was... So I had to make the thing special for me in that way, and I wanted to see. What I really learned a lot about was, of course, the complete environs and habitat that lies within Denali and the Alaska Range. I know so much more about that whole place now than I would ever know seeing it from the town of Talkeetna.
Well, before we have to go, tell me, what's next for you?
Probably grab a sandwich at the Angry Trout. No, I'm going to probably, I think what I'm going to end up doing is do some more climbing this winter. I'm going to go back and try to do an expedition on Hunter, a climb on Hunter.
That's another big one.
Yeah. Another, it's right next to Denali. And then my climbing partner, Pascal from Canada, her and I are going to go try to climb Lucania. It's Canada's third highest peak in winter. Hmm. And she's really got the winter bug, so I'm going to do that. And then in 2020, we're going to, back to Greenland. I haven't been in Greenland for the last 18 years when John Holger and I rounded that thing. I can't believe it's been that many years.
And I really, Lonnie, for me personally, please stay safe when you're on the mountain, because I want to talk to you when you do Greenland again, because I have a feeling it's going to be different than when you were there 18 years ago.
I'm a little worried that it will be. Yes, I know it's changed dramatically due to climate change and stuff, and but and some of the old hunters that I traveled with have since passed away, but I'm hoping to get back and visit and bring back a little bit of news about what's going on in Greenland these days.
Okay, well, in the meantime, we've been speaking with Lonnie Dupree. His book is called Alone at the Top, Climbing Denali in the Dead of Winter. It's an interesting read. It's well presented, and it's got some surprises in it, and I learned a lot. You and I have talked a number of times in the past, but I always learn something new about you.
Thanks.
And about the places that you visit. Yeah. But for me, learning something new about you is just as important as something about the mountain. Well, thanks much, Lonnie. Stay safe.
Thanks,
and
Jay.
We'll see you around town.